All right, so let's go to item seven, which is a review of the real estate performance and pacing recommendation. And I believe, Mr. Whalen, we're back with you having the floor. Can't hear you though.
There we go. Thank you very much. So sharing my screen again. I am going to be relatively brief and respond to any questions or comments. My main objectives today are really to share with you where the real estate program sits and how it's been doing, and then talk about pacing for the future. Within that, I'll give some comments on the market environment for real estate in particular, which will then feed into the commitments going forward and the recommendation. So just going to the executive summary, the private real estate program has performed in line with expectations with varying levels of performance across GPs, as you would expect, going all the way back to the historical funds that have been in the portfolio for quite some time. Our pacing model implies a commitment level of 300 to 500 million per year could be required to meet the long-term allocation objective. And, you know, that 300 to 500 million is not an estimate for each year. It's different years require different amounts to get to that long-term goal. But it's important to note that the pacing study is just filled with estimates, right? In the both the numerator and the denominator. And so we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to that portion of the presentation. Current market conditions continue to favor light industrial. Is there a question? Light industrial, multifamily housing, and non-traditional sectors, which is what we've been focused on this year as well, and we'll continue to focus on as we due diligence funds going into next year. And then importantly, as Tim pointed out, you guys also have a REIT or a public markets real estate exposure to kind of round out the overall real estate exposure. And we'll look at that momentarily as well. So moving on, talking a little bit about the market and what we've experienced. So you can see performance over the long term on these two charts on the bottom of the page. And the first point to make is in 2020, you saw a little bit of a dip, valuation dip. Still got income, and the total return for 2020 in the teeth of COVID was still slightly positive. I attribute that largely to governmental largesse and the fact that the government wasn't willing to allow the economy just to go into free fall. And even the offices that weren't, that didn't have anybody in them, you know, through the zombie apocalypse, were still collecting rents. And then you can see the rebound in 2021. From an appreciation perspective, just shot up, and the total return 17.7% across commercial real estate investments. And then here are the sector differences, right? And so you can see that the brown and the blue next to it is 2021. You can see the challenges in apartment and with concerns about not being able to pay rent. And then as those concerns abated, the multifamily housing or apartment sector did quite well. Industrial, think Amazon fulfillment centers broadly, and for lack of a better characterization, did incredibly well through the period. And even office and retail rebounded through 2021. So I think it's just kind of interesting to understand how the performance of the different sectors proceeded through COVID and beyond.
Yeah, good time to own New York apartment houses, apparently. Mm. And I do appreciate you leaving the global financial crisis on in the graph on page five. I know you do that intentionally, but it puts things in perspective to see what that looked like.
Yeah, and that was, you know, if you think about it, that was really a real estate driven
yes
problem. Yeah.
Jerry Holcomb, you had your hand up.
Back on that same slide there, Scott, for just a second. I appreciate the comment about Amazon, but there were some interesting churning, if you will, about Amazon's pullback on some of its real estate commitments and decisions to, on second thought, we don't want that much square footage. Yeah. So is that still taken into account even here? And would that line have even been higher had they actually taken down what they chose to?
Yeah, so I saw that headline as well, and I don't know. There wasn't a big impact in marks in the industrial space when that headline came out. So I think it was a lot of ado about nothing. They went into COVID thinking like, and as everybody was buying everything in their house from Amazon, thinking that they would need to really ramp up the level of fulfillment centers they had, both the big ones out in the desert here in California and the little infill centers as well, smaller infill centers as well. But, as COVID abated and people sort of got back to normal, they're like, all right, well, maybe we overestimated a little bit and we don't need to build out as much space. But industrial and Amazon not being the only driver of light industrial needs, data centers is in there as well now. And industrial still looks like a really attractive sector.
And then if you could expand just a little bit on the apartment, there seems to be a lot more sympathy with rent payers than purveyors of apartments. The rent controls are still in effect to the extent that I think there's some growing discomfort with the impact this is having on landlords. And doesn't that almost necessarily trickle down to apartment owners?
So I'm not familiar with the rent controls that you're talking about broadly. I do know that rents are some of the biggest areas of inflation, driving inflation. And year over year rents in some markets are as high as 40% increases. So multifamily housing seems to still be a very attractive sector. Because people just need homes and they can't afford, people need a place to live and they can't afford homes.
The one comment I could make, had passing familiarity with New York's market in the past, but the onset of vacancy is typically what in that market allows a return to market pricing, so that the protection extends to existing tenancies at existing rates. And there's also an historic group of properties, I think, that's covered by a different rule. But the bottom line is once a place becomes vacant, then it can be rented at market. That's not necessarily true in LA, but it is, I believe, remains the rule in New York. So,
yeah, from what I can see, though, just I get that, but try and establish a vacancy. The protections seem to have leaned way far to the side of the renters, so that you can't evict them, you can't ask for increases for anyone who wants to stick around, and basically the especially small landlords, and this is largely something we wouldn't be involved with probably, but small landlords seem to be in a very difficult position of trying to cover the nut for their own investment.
So this shift to this slide on fundamentals might be a little bit telling. So you can see what the orange line represents excess absorption, and that's absorption less completions. And you can see that the excess absorption in multifamily and industrial remains high, whereas in office it's a bit challenged. And so the fundamentals still remain attractive in both industrial and multifamily.
Interesting.
Yeah. So just a couple more points on the fundamentals. You can see vacancy by property type here. And again, industrial and multifamily sort of showing very low vacancy rates historically. Office and retail, a little bit different, but coming off of the highs, office being the most challenged. And then the net operating income growth by property type, you can see how retail got hit really hard through COVID, and multifamily as well there, right? As rents were sort of put on hold and forgiveness at the federal level through COVID, and then that jumping back up and retail coming back up as well. So net operating growth off lows, industrial really not taking a dip at all and continuing to steadily increase. So all that gives us kind of a sense just as a background. I'm going to go to this eye chart, which comes directly from our real estate team. And I'm not going to read any of this, but the gist of it is that we recommend continued diversification into alternative property types based on the favorable fundamentals. And then you can just see here along the side, core real estate, neutral, value add neutral, opportunistic, neutral to positive, really based on the fact that down years are great vintage years to get into opportunistic historically. So now I want to shift to your portfolio a little bit. And so here's your allocation. You can see in the orange highlights are your real estate allocation. As of 6/30, you have just about 6% in private real estate and 2% in REITs, compared to a current policy target of 8% for private real estate, 2% for REITs, and a long-term policy target as the private markets program ramps up and will be partially funded by as REITs come down, right? So that REITs is somewhat of a holding place for the time being.
So the reality is we're about 2% underweight to the long-term policy.
Yeah.
Overall. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then here you can see it sort of in graphic format, and you can see the commitments relative to the total funds. So rather, this is the real estate value, right? So the NAV and the fund relative to the commitment level and relative to the total fund. So you can see that the trend is down for both, and that's what we've been working on reversing both this year and as we move into the future to make additional commitments. And then the private real estate program in dollars, the commitments and the value of the program. It's been relatively stable, and that will be turning up shortly as some of those commitments made this year are put to work. And this is another eye chart that's just pulled from the investment performance report that I encourage you to review at your leisure. Here is program diversification. So multiple managers, largely evenly split over the years by geography. You've got most in the West and East, which is you know, typical for a real estate portfolio. And then some across the Midwest and the South, and 13% outside the US. You've got by strategy type, this is a value add and an opportunistic program. So you've got much of your assets in opportunistic and value add increasing as well. So I would expect that value add portion will show up as a bigger slice going forward. And then by property type, we talked about those industrial and residential. That's where the bulk of the program assets are, and some remaining in office. And then by vintage year, good vintage year diversification by commitment, and the by market value will increase as some of this 21 and 22 commitments are put into the ground. Not going to go through the detail here. I did want to touch on performance. So you can see just looking at these performance metrics, you know, you've got, and this is the value add portion of the portfolio. You've got, we try and compare to this public market equivalent, which is the FTSE NAREIT just as a heuristic of how the program is doing. And you can see across the value add funds, it's doing relatively well. Total value from an IRR perspective, right? Just a calculated return perspective, total value to paid in capital. You know, it's relative to its median peer, not doing quite as well, but still sort of in the hunt. And then similar story for opportunistic. And what we're trying to do is put you in funds now on a go forward basis that are really going to increase these metrics. And whereas, you know, the program is doing okay now, we're looking for it to start showing some improvement with the more recent vintage years doing at least as well as or better than peers from an IRR and total value to paid in capital perspective, both IRR and multiples. And now we get to pacing, and this is really the important element of this deck. And so what we've done is an analysis on each fund. We reach out to the fund and say, okay, you know, what's your expectation now at this point in the fund's life in terms of how much capital you're going to call and how much money you're going to pay out over the remaining life of the fund. So this is the first level of estimates comes from the managers. And so you can see we plug that all in, and this is for value add. We have a similar one for opportunistic. But the key number here is the percent of total assets, right, for value add. And you can see, as you would expect for these closed-end funds, over time, the value is as a percent of total assets is going to bleed off without additional commitments. So this is kind of what we say is the baseline. And then we say, okay, how much do we need to commit? And what's the expectation with respect to those commitments for capital calls and distributions to get this up, this what's will ultimately drop to zero up to 10%. Then another big part of the estimation, as I mentioned, is the denominator, and that's total plan assets. So you can see we basically just grow plan assets at the actuarial assumed rate as the best guess that we have. So you know that it's going to be choppy and they'll be up and down, but that's the denominator with which we base our estimate for that 300 to 5 million in annual commitments. So this is value add. Here's the same set of numbers for opportunistic, and it goes starts at 3.2 as of 3/31 and goes down to zero relatively quickly. And here is our estimate based on our proprietary model of what would happen with no additional commitments, and then the commitments required based on 3/31 assets, which was the data we were working with when we put this together, and going out into the future. And so we have projected additional commitments. Here's the 300 to 500 million total program value, total plan value gets you to your 10%. About 6 or 7 years out. And you can see we're actually where assets are today at 6/30, this 4.4% is 5.9. So that just shows you sort of the forecasting error implicit in this exercise. But, you know, roughly speaking, 300 to 500 million per year, and that's about 3 to 5 funds per year. Currently, you're on pace to do that for 2022. So this is just a description of sort of the challenges with the pacing estimate that I just mentioned, and on to recommendations. So so implementation needs to be flexible, right? As you can understand, given the level of uncertainty in the pacing models. So just based on where we are at the end of each year, we'll continue to make estimates, and that will sort of guide what we need to do the next year, expecting to do about 300 in 2023, just like 2022. And then that's about 3 to 5 funds per year. I think we're on track to do 3 and maybe 4 this year. Consider Broadly diversified funds, as we talked about, with emphasis on industrial, multifamily, and other non-traditional sectors. And then specialty funds, you know, maybe even a distressed fund if opportunities present themselves, but targeted funds where we see real opportunities to get some additional returns going forward.
Scott, we had a question from Jerry. Jerry?
It looks on your second point as if you really are making a bet that office is not going to be where we want to be in the future. So I'm not sure I disagree with you, but is that a correct conclusion?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say no office, but de-emphasizing office, yes.
And because of the continuing effects of telecommuting and whatnot?
Because of the high uncertainty, right, with what's going to happen in that space. And I'll just share a quick little anecdote, right? So it's been an area of interest for me. And as I go to conferences and meet with real estate managers, I'm always asking them what's going to happen to office? What's going to happen to office? And nobody's ever given me a really good answer. I get a lot of, it'll be repurposed, or, we don't really know what's going to happen with telecommuting and if people are going to come back over time and blah, blah, blah. And, you see some of that. But then one guy said, it's going to be a disaster. I had to laugh. It was, one data point, one manager's opinion, but it's the uncertainty is high.
Makes sense. Any other current questions for Scott? I don't see any. No hands up. So does that complete your presentation? It does. All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Scott. Appreciate it. Very interesting as always.